One, two, is this on?
Please, ban the basketball housewives.
Sad to see Dog Bounty Hunter coming to an end.
Who the fuck? What the fuck? Why?
My comic book nerd brain just cannot accept it.
That's the dumbest fucking premise for a show I've ever heard in my life.
This wasn't no movie. The smart thing was to say yes, get up, and leave the room. But then I thought to myself, what if this was a movie? Look, you, the plane you flew in on, them shoes, your socks with the bell on it, your gay ass accent, them cheap ass cigars, your yuck mouth teeth, your hairpiece, your chocolate, Guy Ritchie, Prince William, the Queen. This is America. My president is black and my Lambo is blue, nigga. Now get the out of my hotel room. And if I see you in the street, I'm slapping the out of you.
Four pack is back, cause I'm mass destruction. Guess who's here? The bad boys arresting. Just in competition when the war does the mission. Not no mercy, see the race like the street. If you don't know, you better find out the war pack. Point number one, just believe that you don't want to test the bell. I'll be here for the bell, coming to green, but then you're never walking out again. Turn to your back on the wolf pack. Turn to your back on the wolf pack. You might wind up in a body bag.
And welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles. I'm your host, Tim D-O-double-G. And tonight I'm joined by my panel of comic book experts, the late arriving classic material.
Far weak, grog, far weak, mini ball. Hello, gentlemen.
What's up?
Does his volume sound low to anyone?
Yeah, it is.
That was low to me.
I'll get you out there.
See if you can up your volume. Yeah. And while Classic's doing that, we also are joined by Dave Nappy.
What's up, what's up?
And that's at Dave Nappy on Twitter. And for Classic, that's at Classic Materia, no L, on Twitter.
That's right. Does that sound better?
Yeah, it sounds a lot better.
Yeah, I plugged my headset in.
And we also have, last but not least, at PCN underscore dirt.
How's it going, guys?
What's up, Derek?
Can you recognize me? I'm trying to hide underneath the mask. Can you tell?
Yeah. I thought it was Rey Mysterio or somebody. I thought you were like Viano 4.
We had before pre-show, we were saying how I wanted I want a Lucha Libre style mask to wear on these shows.
And Dirt just pulled one out.
Yeah, pulled two out, actually.
He just happened to have one.
Of course, they need to be comic book related.
Oh, there's a third one. My goodness.
Look at that.
Where?
Third mask. We've seen the Rey Mysterio mask. We've seen the yellow mask, the red mask. While Dave Nappy and Classic Material both are sporting the Google effects.
Yeah, I'm sporting my King Vitamin look. Nice. I like that one.
Very medieval. Like and I'm sporting my Darth Maul hoodie. It's actually not Darth Maul. It's just a Nike hood.
There you go. Just do it, baby.
But it looks like Darth Maul. And like I said, I am at TimDOGG98 on Twitter.
Jeez, these masks are killing me. I love them.
I want to see. I wonder how long it'll take before he actually runs out.
Seconds.
While Dirt is flipping through his mask, I will let the viewers know that you can go to dclicknation.com to view the previous live Comic Book Chronicles and the audio version of Comic Book Chronicles and the Click Nation podcast and comic book reviews and all other types of articles we have up on the website. You can also theclicknation.com/blog will allow you to go through previous pages on the website, or you can just click on the different categories at the top, like comics and TV shows and whatnot. So shout outs to @BoxingSoap. So he's watching the show live.
Tope.
Appreciate that, fam. If you, oh yeah. Something else I want to try for this episode. During the show, I'll invite someone to hop on for a minute or two and discuss something if they're up to it. So if you've got a webcam and you got an opinion, let me know either on Google Plus, if you already got me on your circle, or send me a tweet, let me know. I'll send the invite, pull you on. Let's see, facebook.com/TheClickNation is the Facebook fan page. Twitter is @TheClickNation. Find us on Google Plus page, search for TheClickNation, and also the community page is TheClickNation Community. Click spell KLIQ. And with all that out the way, oh, subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher Radio to the Click Nation podcast. With that podcast feed, you'll get these comic book chronicles in audio format. And also make sure to check out ColdSlitherPodcast.com, PopCultureNetwork.com, and the Eclectic Discussion Podcast on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. The website for that is website for that is eclecticrelaxation.com.
.com. Jason.
Jason in the house. So.
Technically, I'm not supposed to speak when I've got this one on.
You're supposed to just raise your machete.
With the blood. So, let's see. This is being recorded on March 7th, 2013, and we're going to discuss the comic books that were released for this week. I, unfortunately, haven't read everything. Of course, it's hard to read every single thing that's released every week, but of the books I had planned on reading, I've read about 3/4 of them. It's been kind of a busy week at work. And yesterday I got home and went straight to sleep. So, let's see. I want to start the discussion with Age of Ultron number one, since that was probably one of the bigger releases for the week. Everyone here read it?
Yep, checked it out.
Cool. So, Age of Ultron, for background purposes, it involves the Avengers villain Ultron, and he has finally taken control of the Earth. And a bunch of heroes are dead, and the remaining ones are, of course, have formed some type of resistance force. And we don't know what happened or what led to Ultron reigning supreme over the world. Age of Ultron number one just starts off with basically the world has been taken over, and Hawkeye is on a mission to free a fellow Avenger from a building, and he basically takes down all the villains and frees the captured hero, who is Spider-Man. And of course, we're going to be talking about spoilers on the show, because that's what we do.
Yep.
So he rescues Spider-Man. Ultron, a bunch of Ultrons come down and destroy the building. Let's see, Hawkeye takes Spider-Man back to the Resistance's, base, which is in, what park is that in New York?
Central Park,
yeah.
And was it the helicarrier? Was that the...
They were in the sewer, weren't they?
Yeah, but I mean, you do see the crash site of the helicarrier. So that does kind of show you that Ultron did, like, take it down. And I think they made the base out of was, like, you know, the remains of the helicarrier. Because you do see the S.H.I.E.L.D. emblem in Central Park, like, right in the meadow there.
Yeah. So they're, like, they've set up shop inside the crashed helicarrier in Central Park. And the issue ends with a cryptic image of Captain America all looking defeated. and his shield being broken, which I guess is supposed to invoke some kind of emotion in the reader of like showing how grave the situation is. But like I said on my advanced review, which you can find on theclicknation.com, click spelled K-L-I-Q, that didn't really do it for me because they did the whole break and cap shield back in Fear Itself.
True. True. Oh,
it was just depressing for me, but they've been doing, you know, they've done the cap shield breaking thing as early as Secret Wars. That was the first time. The very first Secret Wars.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, which Secret Wars?
Yeah, no, the very first Secret Wars. You know, when the Beyonder took them off world, you know, Doom basically, you know, when he took the Beyonder's power. This is not a spoiler at this point. when Doom took the Beyonder's power, you know, he shattered Cap Shield. That was the first time I ever saw it. I think that was the first time it happened.
Yeah, but yeah. That's a huge deal in comics, you know, because Cap Shield is vibranium, nearly indestructible or virtually indestructible. So the fact that it can be shattered, cracked, or broken means there's some serious shit going on. You know, this isn't lightweight stuff. I thought that was a powerful image. Obviously, because we've seen it before, it's probably not as powerful. I thought it was also ironic that Spider-Man was captured, and they seem to have been harvesting his body for MGH, which is mutant growth hormone. And that kind of calls to mind, I'm trying to remember if it was an arc in Daredevil. I think it was, where he was facing off against the Owl, and the Owl was harvesting Maddie Franklin's body for MGH2. And this was years ago. And Maddie Franklin, of course, was the former Spider-Girl who ended up dying.
Oh.
Yeah, so I thought that was an interesting parallel. What I wonder
they were
is...
shooting him up with something to keep him sedated, you know what I mean?
I think they were doing that too, but, you know, when it was basically like a crack den, you know, and they were... One panel, they were showing them, trying to, you know, get this girl set up, strung out, and they said, well, we've got some more MGH for you. And I recognize that those initials, that's mutant growth hormone. Mm-hmm. What they do is they take cells out of superheroes' bodies, and because they have the powers in them, you know, they'll inject them into, normal people, and it gives them a rush, and it also gives them, like, temporary powers. So, yeah, and the Owl was definitely probably was involved in that in the Daredevil storyline. So, you know, a little history there. I kind of wish Marvel had the captions like they did in the old comics where they can just say, okay, MGH is a mutant growth hormone. Go see Daredevil number, you know, whatever.
Right.
Because now it's like, because I read it, I know it, but I'm like, the average reader is like going to be like, MGH, what's that? You know? So there's no connection there, and you kind of have to do your own detective work.
Yeah.
So, what
I thought was interesting, though, was the fact that the villains had worked out some sort of deal with Ultron.
Yeah.
Where, you know, they were going to, you know, pass information or pass superheroes off or whatever and just try to kind of barter their own safety. So while the rest of the world's a wasteland, you know, they get to live basically decent lives. You know, not the lives, but they get to be alive. They get to be more or less free and just kind of do their own thing.
Yeah, they seem to give them zones and territories that they can just kind of leave alone and, you know, for that protection. You know, we kind of see that in some other books, too. You know, Dark Avengers has that kind of arrangement with the heroes that are left on that alternate Earth where each one has their own neighborhood and, you know, you don't cross into other people's territory. So interesting, even in the post-apocalyptic type scenario, there's still some kind of order being set up.
And Logan was kind of similar that way where they had broken up the United States into different villain areas. So, but, you know, I have to say one thing that, a lot of people said is, you know, the story's been delayed for several years. It was supposed to come out a couple of years ago, and for whatever reason, it got pushed back and pushed back. So they don't feel like it's lived up to, you know, 4 years of waiting for the story or whatever. But as far as I'm concerned, I was never on the edge of my seat waiting for it. So now I'm not treated any different than any other. You know, for me, it's not like, oh, my gosh, after 4 years, here it is. I'm just kind of like, all right, this is the Marvel thing now.
Yeah. That was my big thing.
I agree.
With the series, because I haven't been looking forward to the Age of Ultron, even back, I guess, in 2010 and 2011 when they teased it in back-to-back years in their free comic book day issue. And number two, Brian Hitch and Bendis had been working on this, like I said, probably since 2010, 2011. So they had already had all this stuff written and drawn and done. But then Marvel Now starts. So now they had to go back and try to redo dialogue to make it fit in with the now, which I couldn't tell that they even did anything. Maybe nothing was changed in issue one. Maybe some of the future issues will display what they changed. But it just hasn't done it for me. Of course, it's only been one issue, and I've already had a bad feeling about it from the beginning. But it's going to – issue two, which comes out next week, it's going to have to do a lot to make me feel better about the event overall than issue one has.
I sent it to you. You haven't read it yet?
No, because I had to read the stuff that came out this week. I know I know you read it because I watched your whatever. Yeah.
Well, give us a mini spoiler if you can. Do they actually explain how we got from here to there? Or, you know, like where this fits in the time. Okay, well, what that tells me is that this might not even be connected to anything current in Marvel. Like, this might not be the immediate future. What it does tell me, too, is because of what we're seeing in Avengers with the multiple universes popping up and the White Event, you know, we'll discuss that, I guess, later, but that this is probably just one of many universes that or possibilities that could happen, like how DC used to have the Elseworlds stories. And it could just be that this is not like, you know, this isn't universe A or B or, you know, what we're used to seeing. This is just like a big what-if story.
Well, I figured it was an alternate timeline. Mm-hmm. Somehow Ultron found a way to go back in time and set something up that caused this series of events. But I can tell you that issue two, it's very similar to issue one. It's just set somewhere else. Yeah. So like issue one is like, okay, well, here's New York. Then issue two is like, okay, here's San Francisco.
Okay.
So a bigger world picture of what's going on. But like I said, to me, the one thing that stood out to me more than anything else is that everybody seemed to be the same except for Tony Stark. Tony Stark was wearing a different outfit. It looked like a Tron suit. He had a black suit with the blue energy lines on it.
Yeah.
Looked like he stepped out of Tron Legacy. the thing to me is that I'm guessing that is some sort of clue that ties in with Ultron. Like whatever Ultron did somehow is Stark Tech involved, and that's got to be some sort of hint or clue as to what happened and what's going to happen is that Tony Stark's going to be a key part of the storyline.
Yeah, especially the fact that he's running around with a scanner checking, you know, Hawkeye and Spider-Man for God knows what, you know, that Ultron might have infected him with, whether it was a virus or nanites or something. You know, he seems to know more than, you know, than he's given credit for.
And something else I'll point out that I had an issue with, it's something small, but and the first page, they have like two sentences sort of giving you like a recap saying Hank Pym created Ultron and now Ultron's taking over. That's our intro to this story. Hank Pym, I don't believe Hank Pym has been seen in the Marvel Now, which has been going on for what, a month or two now? Well, actually since what, near the end of last year.
Yeah, he
popped up in the first Cap. Like in the first Cap issues, I think he was in there. I'm gonna have to go back and look. You
if
know,
he did,
like,
it had to be like a very first brief issue.
Yeah, I think it was the first Cap issue because I you know I could be mistaken, but you know Cap, you know, like when he went over to, you know, spoilers, when he went over to Zola's world, I think he's carrying some Pym enhanced equipment at, you know, at the very beginning.
Mm-hmm. So Hank Pym was kind of like Q in the James Bond movies. He just gave him the tech and just said, go be on your way.
I believe so. I think that's exactly how it was described when I read, you know, like a review of it. So,
And
but yeah, other than that, you know, he's been pretty absent from the Marvel Now book. So we'll see where that goes. You're right. You know, like the first two lines are pretty striking. And just a quick you know, backtrack, that final image of Cap, you know, kind of curled up into like an upright fetal position was mm-hmm. pretty powerful. You know, it was, you know, like I'm such a huge Cap fan. I see that and I'm just like, that's not right. That shouldn't be. You know,
it's symbolic because he's like the leader, the ultimate leader of the Marvel universe, of the Avengers. And, you know, he's basically the guy that yells Avengers Assemble and everyone looks to him for leadership and guidance. And he's just like dejected. And he's the last person that you want to see. He's the person, if you feel dejected as a hero, he'll tell you to buck up. So get your chin up and get back in the fight. And, and he's just laying, sitting in the corner like, oh, shit, what the hell do we do now?
Yeah. So, and did anyone else get the Daryl from The Walking Dead feel with the whole Hawkeye sequences in the beginning? Like he pulls out the crossbow inside the
bow and arrow, and that kind of made me think
the thing that this issue did, you know, and Hawkeye's right there featured on the cover, is it basically continued to establish Hawkeye as, I guess, you know, the badass or you know, kind of the it hero of the Marvel universe and of Marvel now. You know, he seems to have gotten such a huge push through the Avengers movie up until this point, you know, with his character being kind of reimagined and everything. So this was a great exposure for him, this issue, and, you know, kind of tying into what he does in his book.
Something else I found to nitpick about, it seems Hawkeye is being, his character is far different, like in Hawkeye, than he is in like how he's written in the Avengers books. Because at least in Avengers books, he seems like a capable hero, and in Hawkeye the solo series, he's kind of like mumbling around, getting himself in trouble, which is, you know, fun for a solo book. But of course, that's just another example of it's the same character, but he's being displayed in kind of two different manners depending on who's writing them.
I kind of take that his solo book, his Hawkeye and his downtime. Like, you know how, you know, you're at your work, you're on your game and you're, you know, you're ready and focused, but you go home and it's like, you know, I'm just going to relax and I'm going to do some comic book chronicles and I'm going to type some stuff and I'm going to go to sleep or whatever. You know, you're not as sharp. And, you know, we're seeing Hawkeye like on the weekends and in the evenings and when he goes home from like the missions from Avengers and Secret Avengers. So his guard's a little let down, but he still kind of holds his own, I think. I find it entertaining because it kind of gives some more, you know, a different dimension to the hero, you know, to Hawkeye. But it's kind of more like Spider-Man in terms of the hijinks. You know, Peter Parker got all the powers, responsibility, and intellect, and still, like, you know, he'll let the rent not get paid because, you know, he's so busy concentrating on like day-to-day stuff as Spider-Man.
And let's see, got some Twitter comments I'm gonna go through real quick. Dork Geekus has said he's really trying to light this series. I'm sure you're trying to, but I guess some people like it. I'm sure I'm not the only one that wants to poo-poo this.
I'll say that I enjoy it enough, and I'm going to keep reading it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm going to wait and see.
Oh, that Marvel! How dare you take my money and give me this? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I give it a wait and see. You know, I mean, if it can't be as bad as Fear itself was.
Yeah,
oh, that's undoubtedly.
And let's see, our man William B. West, or on Twitter, William B. West, he says, I think goes back to Iron Man and his outfit and whatnot, and some of the time travel, the time difference of when this takes place. He says, it's probably a bamboozle like 1602 was, that was real time, quote unquote, but didn't affect anything. Or it could mean it was drawn back when Marvel created Tron suits for everyone.
Oh, yeah, and William Bruce West also corrected me on the Maddie arc. That was an alias, not Daredevil. Do you have that mixed up?
Get it right.
Yeah.
It's still Bendis, so that's why you got it a little confused.
There was some MGH stuff going on in Daredevil, too, but I think that was a different villain.
And Dork Geekus also chimes in again. He says, the art is the only reason why I pick up many Marvel books, which I will agree. They have great art.
Top notch.
Even the art by Brian Hitch is great in this book. That's the one thing I did praise in my review was you can't beat the art. So I'll check out the Age of Ultron number 2 and see how that does. But so I guess before we move off of Age of Ultron, everyone want to give their like a thumbs up or thumbs down to it? Classic, I'll start with you.
I'll give it a thumbs up. I mean, the few things you could find wrong with it would just be, you know, characterization. But the, I think the direction they're going in is this is an alternate timeline or an alternate universe or some kind of, you know, something altered with Ultron. You know, they'll explain that, you know, at the end and, you know, how that plays out. But I think this was a good, you know, sort of introduction into, you know, this world or this Age of Ultron. You know, so I give it a thumbs up if that's what we're grading it on. And of course, the art was fantastic. So,
how about you, Dave Nappy?
I give it a thumbs up as well. You know, there's a really, you know, some really striking images in this book. You know, I already mentioned a couple of them, and that Hawkeye as Daryl sequence was pretty good in the beginning. So I liked it. I'd like to, you know, at least see where it goes. You know, how many issues is this? 10 or 12?
10, I believe.
I'd like to see this get somewhere within the first three issues.
Is it like at least two like one-shots in like Fantastic Four and Superior?
Oh, like crossovers? Yeah. But like in terms of like the main miniseries, I'd like to see the story get somewhere within the first three issues.
They're also three. So you're going to get the story pretty quickly. I mean, the story will be over in 3 months, even though you're getting 10 issues, you know?
Right.
And I would have chimed in on the Walking Dead reference, but I don't watch that.
You're missing out, Tim.
Yeah, that's what people say.
Yeah.
I'm a convert.
Hey, do you read the comics too?
I have not, although I definitely had the opportunity to get the first issue, which is one of those things I regret. You know what I mean? Like, I saw it, I had it in my hands on the stands, put it back down. You know, it's like one of those things. But yeah, I mean, I went back to read some of the trades and, you know, through my ways of acquiring things online, you know, went back to read it. That's right. So, you know, it's definitely interesting, you know, like if you read the books, but try not to get too like wrapped up in how it compares to the TV show. I think you should be able to enjoy both.
Okay. And Derp, what I think I saw you earlier give the thumbs up. So is that what you're giving it? What is
that? See, if I like it, it gets Tron. If I don't like it, it gets Sark. See, I gotta go back to the Tron. So it's a Tron.
So the thumbs up is equals to the Tron.
Tron.
Nice. It's got the little mini figure.
All right, and for myself, give it thumbs down for now.
Wow, Tim.
I'm a tough critic.
Oh, sorry, that's the wrong horn.
There you go. All right, let's see. What other book can we discuss next?
Right, what's next?
Avengers number 7.
All right.
I just read that before I came online because I knew we were going to talk about it. And I didn't read it before.
All right, let's pull that up.
Big things are occurring in the Avengers line, at least the main Avengers title. What exactly is happening, I'm not entirely sure. Everyone keeps screaming about a white event, and the sky turns purplish pink, and they need to find a star brand, and we're teased with what, four different characters who look like they could become heroes, and instead of being one to four people chosen as the star brand, we get this kid who is in the background of every single of the four scenes, and he, I guess, is going to be the new star brand, whoever that is, because I don't know anything about the new universe. But Dirt does.
Yeah. Okay, so basically, like, I'm going to try to sum up the new universe as quickly as I possibly can here. The white event was what happened in the new universe that gave people superpowers. And out of, like, I think out of every million people on Earth, two people would get superpowers. So there were only a handful of people that were superpowered. And it was a, you know, darker, grittier type version of the Marvel Universe. And one of the characters, Starbrand in the, new universe got his powers. Actually, they found out not from the white event, but from, another star brand out in space who tried to get rid of his powers. And, like, he was old and the powers were corrupting him, and he found himself becoming evil. So he tried to shoot his powers into, like, some rock or asteroid or something, and it, like, missed and it bounced or whatever, and it hit this kid on Earth, and he became Starbrand. And they realized that, like, as Starbrand, he was super powerful. Like, he was way more powerful than he should be. And as he powered up, the more he powered up, the more he just got corrupted and evil and whatever. And they did a whole bunch of stuff in New Universe where someone would get their powers and have, like, a battle or a freak out or something, and, like, they blew up, I think it was Pittsburgh. Like, the entire town of Pittsburgh became, like, a crater, and they called it the Pit. And so it was just one of those things where superpowered people just don't know what to do with their superpowers. And so I can kind of see that happening in this issue where you see this kid who's, you know, he's always kind of being pushed around. He's forgotten. He's ignored. He's getting the superpowers. And now he's going to be more powerful than he knows what to do with, and it's going to corrupt him and make him evil. And that's kind of like foreshadowing along that. The other character that they showed, though, was a character that named Nightmask. Nightmask was also a character in the New Universe, but in the New Universe, he could climb into people's dreams when they were asleep. He was kind of like Freddy Krueger. He was what they call it, the Dream Master, I guess. This version of Nightmask is completely different. He's some sort of I don't know what you'd even call him. He's like the Silver Surfer of this white event, you know, power. So they completely changed his character. So I'm not sure if Starbrand's going to be completely different, but I can see echoes of what they did in the New Universe with Starbrand. But the fact that this pops up now almost makes me wonder. It's been several years since they've done a bunch of New Universe, you know, characters and anything. So I kind of wonder if this is, hey, trademarks are going to expire, so we need to use these characters in some way to, you know, keep them relevant.
Okay. Yeah, because you came up the idea that, or the suggestion that maybe Marvel's using them just to make sure the trademarks don't expire, right?
Well, that's what it feels like. I mean, I'm sure they're going to say, oh no, we've got this great big huge story planned for them, but
yeah, they're going to say they planned it out 2 years in advance at some retreat last year or something.
It's not like in 2 years all these characters are still going to be there. You know what I mean? So they're going to be here for an arc, and then they're going to disappear again for a few years.
Definitely.
I wouldn't sell Hickman short. He seems like the type that would dig and say, I'd like to use these. And, oh, by the way, they do happen to be, you know, on the point of, falling into the public domain. You know, I don't think it's 10 years. I think it's like, I'm the lawyer. I should know. How long it takes for something to fall into public domain. I don't think it's 10 years. I have this sneaking suspicion that this is Hickman, you know, and this is just the way he works.
The other problem, though, is that I read Fantastic Four because Hickman wrote it, and I really enjoyed it for a long time. And I talked to him at a couple conventions, and, you know, he had all this stuff mapped out and planned, and you could see it unfold, and it was great. And then they killed Human Torch, and within a year, Human Torch was back. You know what I mean? Everybody has their falling down point, and so is there something great planned here, or is this just going to be another one of those types of things?
Yeah, I think they're probably just more going to test the waters with this, you know, and bringing in these characters. And if, like, say, Starbrand becomes a hit or something, you know, he'll get his own book, or he'll be a regular mainstay in the Avengers. I kind of liken the introduction of these characters to the Sentry, where they, you know, started bringing him in and, you know, putting him in different books. And
boo. Eventually,
yeah, you know, apparently, even though he was panned, you know, all over the place, you know, they kind of just forced the Sentry on everybody to the point where, you know, you just, everywhere you looked, he was there. You know, it might be the same thing here, it could be grand opening, grand closing, like you said, with the trademark running out.
Now, let's see. I've never read a Hickman book. I didn't read his Fantastic Four, but, I was originally excited for his Avengers, and I've heard through the, you know, other people that he does the slow build, so he's kind of set everything up right now for hopefully some awesome stuff coming up later on. Dustin Weaver is on for art for this the I guess probably the next 3 or 4 issues. They're doing the rotating artists for, I guess, every story arc. We start off the series with Jerome Opeña, then it went to one of the Kuberts, Adam, I think. Yeah, Adam Kubert. Now we have Dustin Weaver. I'm a big art person. I like reading books because they look good, nice, and pretty. So I had never read a book that had Dustin Weaver on as artist, and I like him. His art is pretty nice. I'd like to see what he does with some action sequences now.
He's good. He did the S.H.I.E.L.D. Limited series, the limited series that I believe Hickman did as well.
Yep, he did, I believe.
Right, so, you know, like, that was pretty good. I was actually, when I don't know what Weaver's done before his Marvel stuff, but when I saw him on S.H.I.E.L.D., I was very impressed. And I was glad to see him doing this.
Yeah, excellent detail in this artwork here. I like the colorization too. You know, it's something I noticed in comics is you know how the colors are, you know. And I know now you know everything is kind of aided with computer graphics or whatever, and with the colors and the inks. But I just kind of like the way that it's set up here. You know, it gives this book a little bit of pop.
And we got a little feedback from the Twitter community that I'll run through real quick. Let's see. Roddy Cat on Twitter says, no new universe book lasted more than 32 issues.
Mm. I think that was Justice that went to 32 issues.
And our man off screen, William B. West, says, Hickman books feel like fucking homework. All those charts and diagrams. I do like the charts and diagrams because I've never read a book that actually had that stuff incorporated into it, so that's kind of nice. I didn't try to go back. Once they gave you the machine code in Avengers, was it 6? I didn't try to go back and try to decode what the Nightmask was saying because I'm pretty sure he was just repeating the same thing over and over again. So.
Now, is this the same Avengers book where, you know, yeah, this is the same title where at the beginning they had like that diagram that showed like which Avengers were featured in the issue?
Mm-hmm.
Saying about the symbols, cap, and right. I noticed this one didn't have that, so I guess by now we've kind of know who's going to be in each issue, or it doesn't even matter.
Well, yeah, I think it's because everybody's in this issue.
Yeah, pretty much.
You know, what's funny? Well, I mean, I guess the main team, I guess. Like, I was just going to bring up like the last page of the issue, the to be continued page. That's a pretty impressive lineup that they have. You know, yeah. Coming to face the wielder of the Star Brand.
Yeah, and I like that they keep current continuity. Hulk's got his armor on. It's, you know, Superior Spider-Man.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, they finally caught up to, like, Bruce Banner being in having the armor, chest plate, and the buzz cut. Because he was missing that in the first 3-story issue art when the book started.
Yeah, Captain Marvel's flying the Quinjet. She's not flying.
Did anybody here get that like kind of Justice League vibe from this panel? You know, like from this panel, just seeing like this group where like really there's not like any kind of like a softy or like kind of other than Cap. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like all hands on deck. You know,
calling Cap soft.
No, believe me, not as a Cap guy, but in terms of like, you know, super powered people, like these are like the, you know, like Thor used to be like the one main heavy hitter, but now they've got like all these like, you know. You know, these huge, powerful characters on here now.
Well, I think that's one of the problems with Avengers is that Avengers, you know, and Justice League for that matter, it's always starts out as the key characters. Like, these are the top characters that Marvel has. And then over time, you know, they'll say someone like Captain America. Captain America is in like 10 different books. So then they say, okay, well, we got Captain America doing too much stuff, we'll take him out. And then they've got Iron Man in a bunch of different books. Okay, we've got Iron Man. And then, you know, and slowly it turns into, like, this B team. You know, the most powerful person on the team is, you know, Spider-Woman. You know, and then it's a bunch of people from New Mutants that nobody knows. And that becomes an Avengers for a while. And then everything.
So need more Cannonball and Sunspot.
Yeah, and not getting their lunch eaten either, you know, some actual real storyline stuff.
Right.
And that was another thing I didn't like was, you know, Parker Doc Ock, you know, whoever. It's like they had him kind of cracking jokes but being a jerk. So it's like we weren't really sure, is this Peter Parker Spider-Man or is this Doc Ock Spider-Man?
Oh, no, it's definitely Doc Ock.
It's Ock.
Yeah. He's being a dick.
Okay, I'll ask the question. Which Ock was it supposed to have been in Age of Ultron? They say it's supposed to be Ock, but he doesn't really sound like Ock.
I think that's definitely hands down Peter Parker, and that tells me that this is an alternate timeline or universe. This isn't
Bendis has already come out and said it's Ock.
Yes, which made no sense because it doesn't sound like Ock.
Yeah, well,
which again, lends my theory that, of course, this was written and drawn years ago, and now they're just now putting it out.
Oh, no question.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, because with Superior Spider-Man, you tell him apart because of the eye. You know, his eye has those lenses on it, and then the have the little, you know, talons on them. And this version of Spider-Man in Age of Ultron was all ripped up and torn apart, so you couldn't tell.
Yeah. I wonder if that maybe was a last-minute art change, though.
Well, no, because
the promo images had them.
They released those teaser images showing Hawk and Spider-Man.
Spider-Man's already kind of ripped up, right?
Yeah, you just got to take their word for it that they talk to each other at Marvel. You know, because apparently Superior Spider-Man and this whole thing, that was supposed to have been planned a year in advance, according to Dan Slott. So if he and Bendis weren't talking, then you know that'll show bear out in the results or in the future issues.
Yeah. But let's see, anything else to talk about with Avengers? It's like stuff happens, but then stuff doesn't really happen.
Yeah, I did like that they kind of at the end highlighted the kid in the background because I just kept wondering why they kept cutting to all these different college students. And, you have to scan the panel to actually see the kid. They just said, oh, well, here he is. He's with the one thing all these different scenes have in common, you know, at the college. And he turns out to be the holder of the Star Brand power.
So we'll end it with the thumbs up or the thumbs down again. We'll start with Dirt. Avengers 7, thumbs up or down, or whatever figurine you're going to use. That means thumbs up. Dave,
don't you know?
Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
What was that?
I was
getting Dirt mad at us.
Dirt, you were getting mad at us.
There's feedback. Everything's like locked up and going crazy.
Yeah.
Too loud. Google Plus got mad at me.
You sound better. That feedback actually might be from Dave Nappy's side. Say something, Dave.
What's that?
Yeah, Dave, I think it's your mic.
Got a little feedback.
Must be. I'll try to turn it down.
He's getting invaded by Ultron. Age of Ultron starts in Brooklyn.
I'm just going to get better about muting the mic so that I'm not always on.
Cool.
Oh, is it my turn to do a review anyway? Or thumbs up?
Thumbs up. I was going to say, the Dirt, did you want to, was there anything else you were going to add to your thumbs up?
No, that was it. That was all.
All right, now it's your turn, Nappy.
All righty. So I'll give it a thumbs up. You know, I really enjoyed the Weaver art, and I want to see where this goes.
And Classic.
Thumbs up, straight up, you know, great setup. You know, I'm looking forward to seeing more out of this. Art was fantastic in my book. I could have done a little less with the repetitive, this is the white event. I was like, just, geez, come on, let's just get to it already. But, I mean, it's dialogue that was necessary and it was characterization. So, you know, although it annoyed me, I am looking forward to seeing more out of this. I kind of want to see, you know, how this plays out with Cap and Tony and, you know, what they're going to do. And, you know, just how the different characters are going to interact because there's so many in the Avengers.
And I'll give it a halfway thumbs up. Meaning, kind of here, meaning trending upwards. Art was great.
A little bit.
Something's happening in the story. We just don't know what yet. I do like that, I think, the last two issues? Or no. Well, actually, I'll just say this issue because I know for sure had that one image of Thor and Hawkeye on top of the Avengers Tower looking at the white event, which, of course, was one of the images for foreshadowed in Avengers number one. So they're using their references quickly. Thank you, Classic.
You're welcome.
And let's see, next up we'll have all new X-Men number 8 from Brian Michael Bendis guy. And I think Stuart Immonen was back on art. And this one dealt with the Avengers come. The Avengers finally find out about the original X-Men from the past. And let's see, I think what else happened in it. The only thing that stood out in my mind are when the Avengers showed up on the front lawn and Beast and Captain America were having a talk, and Iceman and Kitty Pryde took it upon themselves to reenact the conversation taking place yards away from them.
That was hilarious. Just because you could tell word for word that they were really capturing what they were saying from a distance, and even when you cut to Cap and the Beast, it's kind of like they were just finishing the discussion, you know. So it's like, you know, the text just kind of fits right in, and it's funny because everyone's just watching them play this out. No one's laughing or anything. They're just kind of like, wow, look at these two idiots. But, you know, it kind of shows, even though these are like the elder statesmen of the X-Men, being that, you know, they've been there so long, they're still both kind of immature, or not immature, but they're both kind of, you know, have that still that kind of prankster, childish way about them. You know, Kitty Pryde once being the youngest of the group of the team, and now she's the headmistress of the school. And, you know, Iceman being one of the oldest members, but he's always going to be a prankster. And all this in front of the younger version of himself right behind him.
I also think that there is a little bit of, you know, kind of poking fun at themselves with that whole conversation, because at the same time, it's like, how many times have we seen Captain America face off with some same conversation? He did it with Scott. He did it with Namor. He did it with Tony Stark. He did it with Professor X. You know, it's like time and time and time again, it's like, here lands the Quinjet, out comes Captain America, and he does that. So instead of showing that again, it's like, okay, well, what is everybody else doing at that same point? We've seen this conversation a million times. How does everybody else react? And so I thought it was kind of fun this time to at least see something different than, you know, that the whole speech that you've come to know and expect, and you know exactly how it's going to play out. And it's great the fact that the characters in the Marvel Universe are thinking the exact same thing. Okay, here it comes again. It's the exact same speech. I don't understand your indoor plot. Your horseless carriages and, you know, this new world of yours, and, you know, making fun of Captain America for being old. You know, it's just that idea that the readers are kind of thinking, okay, we've seen this before, and then the people in the Marvel Universe are saying, okay, we've seen this before. Like, I like that type of humor when they throw it in there.
And I just remembered the beginning part of the book dealt with original Angel and current Angel taking on Hydra in New York City. And Angel's been the one member of the original X-Men who hasn't been crazy about them staying in the present. And he kind of freaks out and he wants to go back home. And let's see what else.
Hanging out with the older / younger version of himself, because apparently Angel, modern day Angel, was de-aged and, you know, as a result of the end of X-Force. Title.
The Reborn Angel.
Yeah. So it's kind of weird because it's like hanging out with your grandpa who's like a teenager or something. Shout out to Young Again, the George Burns movie. But it's kind of like, it's kind of weird, and it freaks him out even more so because, like, he just goes through the whole title going, this is what I've become. This is what I've turned into. And he kind of wants to know the secret behind how Angel got to this point. So he wants to know, like, the dark truth about Archangel and all that other stuff, which I'm sure if he found that out or if someone did tell him, he would freak out even more, you know. So the fact that he wants to go home even now, it just tells me that, you know, he's just not coming. It's not sitting right with him, just what he's seeing, you know, at all. This would be the freak out that all of them should have went through with the first issue when they first came to the present day. You know, he's still going through that. He hasn't coped at all. But I do like the plot device that they use to kind of keep him sedated, so to speak.
Yeah, I was going to get to that at the end. Also want to, after the Captain America and Beast discussion, we had original Scott Summers walk up to Cap and introduce himself and say basically he has no problem with them and he wants to, I guess he's there to try to set things right, and he knows that they haven't always seen eye to eye, but he doesn't want to turn out like his future self, which left everyone kind of shell-shocked.
Scott Summers has always been a Boy Scout. That's just who he is, you know. And he hasn't been corrupted by the mutant stuff over the years like the current Scott Summers has. So he's basically polishing the apple for the teacher. There's no Professor X around. He sees someone of authority like Captain America, and he's basically saying, "Well, don't worry about me. I'm going to be an A+ student, and I'm going to do my best as a mutant here. So you don't have to worry about me, Captain America. I'm on it."
He gives his little, scout salute.
Yeah.
Now I want to see a Captain America and Cyclops team-up book.
You know, this time around, I promise you, no, I will not take a small island country and kill everybody just to prove my point about the Phoenix power. I promise you, I'm good this time. I'm good.
I got these bots of do-si-dos I need to sell.
Thin mints.
Yeah. No, actually, Girl Scouts. The Boy Scouts sell the popcorn.
There you go. There you go.
That trails in popcorn.
Yeah, off topic, but I don't think I've ever, I don't think I've seen a Girl Scout or Boy Scout in over 10+ years.
That's because everyone sells it at your office. They pimp it through the parents.
That's right.
They don't wear the outfits anymore, do they?
No, the Boy Scouts do. Like, I've seen Cub Scouts outside our supermarket when they sell in the popcorn. You know, and you know, so they still have them, and you know, they are in public. But because there's so many Chris Hansen types out there, you know, it's probably not as prevalent as it used to be.
And like you mentioned just a second ago, classic. The issue ends with Angel trying to break into Beast's lab to get the time machine to go back to the past, and Jean Grey stops him by sort of going into his mind and setting him at ease and calming him down. And she walks away defiantly saying, "Don't worry, guys, I got this."
Yeah, because that'll never go bad.
Yeah, we haven't seen anything bad happen with Jean Grey before. We haven't seen her corrupted by power.
I'll stop that.
Actually, that was all I had to say for that. What was everyone's opinion on that?
This is one of those. This was one of those Bendis type issues where it's a little bit of each. You know, it's some action, it's some setups and some dialogue. Had a little bit of everything. So I would say it's one of his better efforts, you know, in terms of putting a story. We've seen the best and the worst of Bendis over the years, and I think this was one of his better efforts. This book has actually been a good read, you know, from beginning to this point. So I definitely give it a thumbs up for that. And the artwork, was great. Eminent didn't do the interior pencils, just the cover, but, was it Marquez that did the art, the pencils on this one? It was pretty, pretty solid, a nice change of pace, but at the same time, it wasn't too different from, what we regularly see. So, I liked it. Thumbs up.
So the thumbs up from Classic, Dave Nappy.
I give it a thumbs up too. There are some really, that whole Kitty Pryde and Iceman bit, there was some snappy patter in there. You know, Iceman says something like, "I don't want to hear none of your jibber jabber." I think I laughed out loud when I read that one. it was good. You know, like Classic said, the Marquez art transition was seamless, and I really enjoyed it. So I'd like to see where they go, and I want to see what happens to Jean Grey. See if it was almost inevitable, even now that she knows what happened to her, what's supposed to happen to her. Let's see what happened. Let's see if she's able to, alter her course, so to speak.
Which toy figure are we going to see? Dirt?
We're getting another one. I enjoy that. I thought it was funny. I especially liked at the beginning when the Archangels are fighting Hydra and they attack the Avengers Tower. And they're like, the Avengers aren't even home. Like, are you guys the biggest cowards in the universe, or do you have the worst timing possible of all time? You know, just I enjoyed it.
Which I find that odd, because Avenger Mansion is always crawling with Avengers. There's like 20 of them.
Oh, yeah, the tower. And that, yeah, and the old Angel was like, they live in Avengers Mansion. New Angel's like, no, they're in Avengers Tower now. It kind of showed how times have changed since, you know, the 60s when the X-Men were supposed to be growing up. But I don't know, Marvel time, this must have been what? Actually, would have been still the 60s, I think, or 70s.
And for myself, I'm giving it the thumbs up. I like the art, of course, is awesome. The developments with Jean Grey definitely warrant paying attention to. And I'd also say even the developments with Angel, it should be interesting to see what comes of his mind being intruded upon. And Avengers had a busy week because they appeared in this issue of All New X-Men, and then they were also, I guess, Uncanny X-Men number 2 last week?
Yeah, well, they show up at the last page, I think, you know, to take on Cyclops' as a new team.
So they're taking on some X-Men this month, even though no fighting took place in this issue. Let's see, next up on the plate, I'll jump around. What, anyone read any DC books?
Sure.
even though I supplied a couple, no, I didn't.
I am halfway through with Green Arrow, which I must say I'm enjoying issue 18 a lot more than 17. Oliver Queen is still on the run. He is trying to clear his name and get to the bottom of who framed him. The art is awesome in it by, I'm not sure the guy's name. I would look now, but I don't feel like it. And Sorrentino, Andrea Sorrentino, is that the artist or the writer? Anyone know?
Artist.
Ah, see. Yeah, that's right, because Jeff Lemire is writing it.
Yeah.
Right. See, I do know a little something.
That's the issue.
What was that?
Did you not like the last issue?
I liked it. Some of the art was... the art seems a little cleaner this issue. Like how Sorrentino does the sort of the blocking of the different panels to give emphasis on like an arrow here or a building or an object in the background here. Some of that stuff seemed kind of, it wasn't exactly clear to me in issue 17 like it was in 18.
Okay.
But,
I started reading Green Arrow when it first came out, and I really didn't like it. I didn't like the whole team aspect. I didn't like how, to me, it felt like Buffy, but with a dude. And you know, all these people behind him doing research, and you know, they had their secret bunker full of technology and all that kind of stuff. And for me, I just like I didn't care about any of those characters, and I didn't like, you know, his kind of over the top lifestyle, and I was like, there's just like I just don't like this guy, and I've got no reason to care. So then when they came along and Jeff Lemire's like, okay, well, I'm just gonna kill everybody and take away all his money and throw him into the worst thing possible, then I was like, okay, now I'm interested.
It definitely helps to have a better writer and like sort of a plan and not firing people after two or three issues, even though the writing I guess definitely wasn't up to par. They got rid of whoever the original guy was that started on the book. But I'll say for now, even though I haven't finished it, Green Arrow 18 gets a thumbs up from me. I don't know if anyone else here has read it or not.
Not here.
I skimmed it. From what I can see, the art looks pretty cool. You know, it's that rough style, kind of like what we're seeing in Hawkeye, except, you know, maybe a little more, like you said, a little cleaner. You know, but I'm interested because I want to see who this Komodo guy is, and the fact that he's kind of behind this framing, so I will be checking this out this evening.
Cool. Let's see. Pick another book here. Anyone read Iron Man 7?
Nope. Yes, unfortunately.
Whoa, unfortunately. Why the unfortunately?
This is definitely moving towards the drop pile for me, not the buy pile. Do you want to start or do you want me to get into it? I got to pull it up on my my computer here.
While you pull it up, I will say Iron Man went to my drop pile after issue 2. Wow. But once I found out that, I guess, issue 6 was going to pick up with Tony finally in space doing space stuff, I said, okay, I'll give this book a try again. Plus, I think Dirt sent me the advanced copy for it. So I was like, hey, I'll read this. PopCultureNetwork.com.
Yeah, I was in the I'm in a similar boat. I wanted to give it a chance until we got to the cosmic stuff. And now that I'm reading it, I still can't get over, I can't get past the Greg Land artwork. It's so distracting for me. And it's just, I can't concentrate on where the story is going because the art is, it's bad when he's not lightboxing a picture. You know what I mean?
Wait, is this the God Killer thing where he's put on trial?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
I do have that in my queue to read because I actually jumped back on because of this arc. So I did read the last one. So I am kind of curious as to how this plays out. But from what I'm hearing, you guys didn't like it. So
this is the first Iron Man issue that I actually enjoyed. It was funny. Had a little action with Tony finding different aliens, which was entertaining. But the dialogue by Kieran Gillen was definitely crisp this issue. Like the back and forth between Tony and his lawyer.
That's right.
Because I know last issue he's about to get some alien strange.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know.
But yeah, I enjoyed this. Like I said, this is definitely my favorite issue of Iron Man. And honestly, I've only read 4 issues. I think issue 1, 2, 6, and 7 I've read. So small sample size, but right. Book hasn't been good so far to me, but this one I enjoyed. It was fun.
Well, if Gillen is listening, then I suggest if you want more readers, more Alien Strange, please. There you go. Thank you.
And for God's sake, switch the artist, please.
Yes. That's the biggest problem with this book. But
stop complaining about the swipes. Because when he swipes, it's beautiful. Like, I don't care if he steals it out of whatever catalog. I don't care if he steals it, out of my family's photo album. When he swipes it, it looks beautiful, and just let him go. Let him do it.
Let's see. Anything else to add for this? That's about it, really. It was an enjoyable book. I probably still wouldn't recommend Iron Man as of now. But if you want to perhaps check out this God Killer storyline where this alien race worshiped the Phoenix and they believe Tony Stark killed their god, so now he's on trial. Oh, and the issue, there's a last page has a villain that shows up to fight Iron Man, who we also saw the same villain in a comic last week. Who I won't spoil. Even though I say I spoil stuff in this book, in this comic book chronicles podcast, I will not spoil that. I'll just say this villain appeared last week in a Marvel comic. Cue ominous music.
Drama.
Let's see.
Oh, that's what the drama one sounds like. Okay.
y'all haven't filmed the effects. I haven't even looked at that.
But yeah.
Since I have to host, I'll let y'all be my support staff.
Put me in the credits as sound editor.
That's what you're here for.
Yeah. Key grip, dolly grip. Dolly grip, key grip. Best boy.
Let's see. Got some got a comment or two. Shout outs to, not even sure how to say his name, Horace_00 with the X. Says he's listening now. Appreciate it. Also, shout out some other people that said they were listening earlier. I believe Empress Geek is listening. William Bruce West, of course, is listening. Roddy Cat, Laidback Benny, hopefully, is listening. Short Geekus, And let's go down some more. Brock sits two sits. And Sherry's Joy, all listening. And Boxing Soap, all listening tonight. Oh, and let's go back up again. Roddy Cat asks, have you or anyone read TMNT's Secret of the Foot Clan?
Damn it! I was supposed to pick it up last week, didn't. I wanted to get it this week. Thanks to the snow, I didn't. So I will be going to get that. I am very intrigued by it. I want to check it out.
Dirt's supposed to be him.
I haven't read them.
Yeah, I put my request in for some IDW books a while ago. I think Dirt's still working on that.
Hey, send me an email reminder, and I'll get
it. Yeah.
Because I think IDW, the only thing I wanted to read, were the Turtles and the new G.I. Joe series is by IDW, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they just restarted their G.I. Joe series like last month. Don't you want Kiss?
What's that?
Kiss.
Oh, God. Kiss, he said, what's that?
Kiss,
he said, what's that?
The metal band, the rock band.
Nah, I'll skip Kiss, thank you very much.
He only knows about the Kiss.
Let me stick to the toys of my youth. But, Roddy Cat, since you asked, I'll send the question back to you. Are you reading TMNT's Secret of the Foot Clan? And if so, what are your thoughts? You can tweet them to me and I'll read them whenever they pop up here in the tweet deck, which is trying to go away from us. But let's see. What other books do you fellas want to bring up tonight?
Guys, got to bring up this guy here. I'm pointing to my abdomen.
I see Spider-Man. Oh, yeah. Secret Avenging Spider-Man. Not Avenging.
Superior.
Superior Spider-Man number 5. Well,
Spidey goes over the edge in this one.
Or does he?
Oh, exactly. Dun, dun, dun.
Play that music again. Yeah.
All right, so the way this book plays out is Spidey Ock, or Doc Ock Spidey, or whatever you want to call him. I call him Peter Octopus. He is still trying to track Massacre, who basically lived up to his name. He basically butchered, massacred, killed a whole bunch of people in a burger town or burger franchise. And so the story starts off with an executive at Burger Town taking a call. She's basically trying to handle PR because it's blown out the water. They're getting all this negative PR about this killing. He left two people alive, a woman and her child, just to kind of send a message that Massacre did this. And apparently right behind this woman is Massacre telling her, hang up the phone right now. I've got a proposition for you. Now, a little background on Massacre for those not reading, he's basically one of those villains. He kills, but he has a portion of his brain damaged to the point where he just can't feel emotion, or he's not hindered by emotion, so he just kind of kills like mechanically, like a robot. And so he goes through this title, with all this reasoning. He reasons with this woman that he can kill again in public and it would be worth her while because he can wear the t-shirt of her competitor, which I thought was kind of funny. So Spider-Man is still trying to track him down. And he gets to the point where he basically creates these spider bots, which are like Dr. Octopus's bots, and puts a facial recognition software on there. And I'll explain. We got to talk about the irony of the fact that he's working with Uatu Johnson, who's this bald kid, for this facial recognition software. But so with the software and the spider bots, they're deployed all over the city. They're trying to find Massacre. And then all of a sudden he just decides, I'm going to go do something more important while this is happening. So he goes off to meet this physics tutor for this class he's taking at ESU, who turns out to be this woman who's a little person. I thought that was a funny twist. I'm like, who's this child that opened the door? I'm a little person. Like, oh, so we got hobbits in Spider-Man. Anyway, sorry for all the hobbits that were offended by the comment there. But in any case, going on, they actually have dinner and they talk physics or whatever and have a nice evening. The whole time Peter Parker's freaking out, like, yo, you've got astral projection Peter Parker or Peter Parker the ghost of Peter Parker is freaking out, like, oh, you're supposed to be going after Massacre. What are you doing? And eventually he does leave after he gets an alert that they did find Massacre. And he does something that Spider-Man doesn't do. Instead of going right to the fray or right to where the incident's taking place, he goes off to a warehouse somewhere. And this is Doc Ock kind of at work, where he basically thwarts the villain's plan B before going to meet the villain at plan A. So he basically goes and rescues the hostages that he knows are kept in another warehouse off to the side, and it comes back and then fights Massacre. And then Massacre pulls out a detonator during the fight and goes, I'm gonna blow up these hostages I have somewhere, and you're gonna have to go save them. He's like, oh, you already got ready. I already took care of that. So I thought that was funny. And then after that, he does something that's very super villain-like, which he crushes Massacre's hand and takes his gun from him, points it at him, and then all of a sudden you see blam, and of course, off-panel, you don't see what happens, but all you see is it ending with blam, and then it cuts to the news reports, and the police are there, and they're congratulating Spider-Man, and Mayor J. Jonah Jameson is there congratulating Spider-Man. So you don't know if he actually shot him or what, or if something else happened. But basically, Doc Ock is saying, this guy's a killer. He's going to run loose again. I've got to do something to finish this. And it's not what Peter Parker would do. We've seen Peter Parker stay Doc Ock's hand back in number one. So that's kind of how it ends. And then, of course, the reveal with the Burger Town executive being watched by all the spider bots at the end. That was a different twist, too.
And also, right before when he grabs the gun and points it back at him, he's like, I'm trying to be a good guy. And if I lock you up, are you just going to escape and go back out and kill people again? I don't know what to do. And it cuts to the people standing around him. And the people standing around him are like, shoot him. Or kill him. Do it. And so while he's sitting there like trying to decide what to do, it's like a mob of people around him are like, yeah, blow him away.
That's yeah, he just blew away a whole Burger Town full of people. Why are you going to let him go? I think what he might have done was just shot him in the head or something, and probably not killed him, but grazed his head enough to give him brain damage again or something. He's got that metal plate.
His hand, he can't shoot, he can't hold a gun anymore.
Oh, yeah.
My gut says he crushed the gun. That's my gut reaction.
I liked how Doc was doing things that Peter had never even thought of to do, like learn the police of danger, and
yeah, he called it in. He called it backup. Peter Parker never called the cops. Spider-Man's just flown in, just directly.
And I liked his just forming like a little supporting cast for new Doc Ock Spidey with the Uatu Jackson, and how Otto Octavius is a couple, I guess, hours of credit short of in his degree, so he has a tutor who cooks him dinner.
Yeah, he's Doc Ock, so he doesn't really need a tutor, but the fact that he's getting home-cooked meals and this he seems to be sweet on this little person, seems to, that might be a love interest for Peter Octopus, for future issues. Basically, all the fanboys, myself included, were worried that Doc Ock taking over Peter's body means he's just going to be banging out Mary Jane, and that's really messed up. But apparently it's taken a different direction from that. Sorry for my language.
It's all right.
And
I don't know. I wasn't bothered by that whole idea. When people said, it's not Peter Parker anymore, it's Doc Ock, and she thinks it's still Peter, is it really right for him to try to have a relationship with her? And, is it right? Is this an assault or whatever? The way I look at it is it's not that Doc Ock and Peter still exist, but Peter is gone. Doc Ock is Peter.
Yeah.
Whatever happens, this is the new Peter. So he goes to talk to Mary Jane. That's just who Peter Parker is now.
I don't even think it's a matter of Mary Jane. Yeah, I don't think it's a matter of Mary Jane's safety that people were so much concerned about. They are, but they're more so concerned like, yo, you're going to mess with Peter's girl. It's already enough you took his life. It's like, damn, just twist the knife further.
But you better not date his girlfriend.
Yeah, and this is a guy that shares now the memories of sleeping with Mary Jane and Aunt May. But, you know, that goes back to our superior, our Amazing Spider-Man 700 discussion. So
let me run through some feedback. Got some responses on the Twitter. Let's see. Horace_0 says he thought Iron Man number 7 was funny and enjoyable. Variant Dash says TMNT Secret of the Foot Clan is great so far. Great art and nice look into the mythology. Definitely want to I myself want to check that out. Horace_0 asked what did we think of Age of Ultron book 1. We actually started the show with that. I didn't enjoy it that much. Everyone else liked it a little better than me. That sound about right?
Yep, that's fair.
That's it.
Yep.
Roddy Cat answered the question I asked him earlier about the TMNT. He says he picked it up. Yeah, he picked it up on Comixology, so he hasn't read it yet. He'll let us know. Let's see. Variant Dash also says, this is the first time Peter Parker has stopped me from enjoying Spider-Man, which I'm taking that to mean, I guess he wants to see more Otto and less Peter trying to interfere and butt in.
Yeah.
Taking a step back. I mean, you don't see him as much as he was in the early books. You get long stretches of just Otto doing his thing. And in the first book, you know, you have that scene where Doc Ock guy just punching, and Peter Parker comes in, grabs his hand, and actually stops to you know, beat the guy. And it seems like as the series has gone on, Peter controls Doc less and less. Like now, you know, he stands there and Doc Ock just like walks right through him like he's a mist. You know, doesn't seem to know he's there. There's no sort of interaction. So I get this feeling that Peter's, you know, control over Doc is lessening and lessening. Are, you know, fading away. And
well, then it's still there.
Future thing, you know, where it's like he's looking at his hand, and his hand's not there anymore, and then, you know, he's got to get mom and dad to have sex or, you know, whatever you do in the Marvel Universe, come back from the dead.
I think it's still there. In fact, in this past issue, Peter actually forces Doc Ock to save the kid using his webs, or Doc Spidey using his webs, whereas Doc Ock wasn't even going to do that, and he again goes through that whole thing of I gave up my my position, my strategic advantage to save this child. Why did I do that? You know, and so I think there's still a realm of influence. I think a lot of it's kind of similar to Spider Sense. It's like kind of limited, crucial situations. You know, so Peter's not going to intercede on something that's not like an emergency, but he will if it means like saving someone's life or you know, he's not going to basically tell Doc Ock, you can't go here, but he's going to say, don't kill this guy, save this person, you know, be more like me. You know, we'll see that struggle hopefully play out. I think we've got the future issues of Superior where that's going to come in and, you know, come to a head. One thing I was disappointed was we didn't get to see any more foreshadowing of Norman Osborn. I was waiting for that to happen.
Yeah, they teased Norman back, what, 2 issues ago?
Yeah.
Yep.
I would have thought he would at least gotten a panel or page or something.
Nobody forgot. Like, nobody reminded him. Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. I'll have to do something with that next issue.
Yeah, they probably will.
Roddy Cat said he wants to see Uatu Jackson's origin. His mom's got some explaining to do.
Oh, because of the name Uatu? You know what? His name is Uatu. He's bald-headed. And he has facial recognition software. Dave, you know what I'm getting at here?
Bald-headed facial recognition software? You got me.
Who do you know named Uatu that's bald-headed?
Oh, the Watcher.
I think he's a Watcher. Plays there, and he's gonna basically, you know, that's my theory. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is a background character named Uatu. Why are they doing this? Facial recognition software? I don't know. Something just doesn't add up, or something does add up here.
Well, when was the last time we saw the Watcher? AVX?
Wait, we saw the Watcher. I want to say a couple weeks ago. He was in the background, being, well, of course that's all he is, in the background being mysterious.
Damn it, what Watcher that's breaking the rules?
Wasn't he a New Avenger, the last New Avengers? Because they showed Thanos. It was like Thanos and the Watcher.
Yeah.
All in different places.
Oh, you're right. You're right. He took notice of the gauntlet being put together.
Yeah.
Before Cap screwed it up.
I still don't think Cap screwed that up. I wasn't part of that conversation.
He took the blame though.
Yeah, like, bring up what you put on your comment on the post for that.
I don't even remember. I just like the way I read it, they made it sound like he was like, I squeezed it too hard or something like that. You know, like I shattered the gems or the gauntlet. I'm like, no, that's just what was supposed to happen because they used the gauntlet against against this other dimensional, you know, power thing. Like, I don't know if anyone remembers Avengers versus JLA, but like when they took the Infinity Gauntlet into the DC universe, it didn't work. You know, yeah. So I thought it was going to be something similar to that.
But it's kind of jacked up how they treated him too, because they basically just gave him all the blame after they told him, "Hey, Cap, you handle it. You know, you take the sticks because we're not worthy." And I was like, "Well, Cap, you fucked this up, man." Yeah, they kicked him out the team.
Yeah. We're just going to wipe out your memory and kick you off the team.
Yeah. I want to say, I think Roddy Cat also commented about that he thinks that Cap did it on purpose or the gems really aren't destroyed.
Oh.
I'm getting my commenters on the website mixed up. But let's see, the end, Superior Spider-Man number 5, I give it a thumbs up. I like, this might be... Between Avengers and Superior Spider-Man, as far as which book has the best combo of artists and writers, because I like Giuseppe Caminoli and forgetting everyone
Camicoli,
else. Caminoli,
I think it is.
How do you say his name?
Yeah.
And
the Italian guy.
My man Ryan Stegman, and who's the third guy?
Someone Ramos.
Oh, yeah. Humberto Ramos.
Who I think Ramos is coming on the next 3-part issues. And actually, they should be getting into the You're Fired story pretty soon, right?
Yeah, I think that might be the next arc.
I think so.
Where supposedly they're teasing Spider-Man getting fired from the Avengers. So, guys, see how that goes down.
Yeah, can't be eating the other team members' lunches, man. That's just not the move. You will get fired for that.
If only that happened in real life, right?
Yeah. I catch somebody eating my lunch, so one of us get fired. One of us get escorted out by security. I know that.
Right. And let's see, more comments. Roddy Cat chimes in again. He says, someone will use the time gem and go back and get the other gems. That was no accident. Yeah, that was him. That was on he commented on one of my posts about his theories on New Avengers. And so, let's see. Nappy, do you want to give thumbs up or thumbs down to Superior Spider-Man?
Thumbs up. Thumbs up. I enjoyed the issue.
Dirt?
Another thumbs up. I've been loving Superior. I want Peter Parker to go away. I want Doc Ock to be Spider-Man forever, as far as I'm concerned. So I love this series.
And finally with you, Classic.
Thumbs up for me, man. You know, I like Doc Ock Spidey. I didn't think I would, but yeah.
I'll take a quick, not a quick break, but a quick moment to let the viewers that are watching live, if you any more comments you want to chime in with, go ahead and tweet them to me. I'll read them on the air. Or if you have a comment on a book that we haven't discussed yet, go ahead, feel free. Whatever comments you want, I'll read them. And let's see, any other books that we can go through? Anyone read Cable and X-Force number 5?
Yeah, I did.
I actually read it about an hour before the show, and I loved it. One, I love Cable and X-Force because I grew up on Cable and X-Force back when it was just X-Force. Number two, I like the art by my man Salvador La Roca. The man doesn't miss a month or miss an issue. And number three, I keep getting the writer with this and the writer for Uncanny X-Force mixed up.
Oh, this is Hopeless.
This Hopeless? Okay. his art, not his art, but his writing, and at least especially this issue, was great. I liked, this was sort of a more character-centric issue. It dealt more with, like, the, like, they paired up Domino and Colossus were doing stuff together and doing stuff together.
Doing stuff together, he says.
Well,
I-O.
They were doing, yeah, doing stuff together. And then they had Forge and the science geek guy with the trench
Nemesis. Pairs.
Yeah. Is it, what's his name? Nemesis?
Yeah, I think it's Dr. Nemesis.
Yeah, Dr. Nemesis. They had them two paired up doing like a little rivalry. So it was fun seeing, especially those two going at it, trying to one-up each other. And Domino helped Colossus blow off some steam. And you see, Cable and Hope had their moment. And then I want to, it's interesting with the, Cable had another vision, and this one involved, it looked like a alien spaceship and a bunch of fighter jets flying towards it with like different Avengers flying towards it. Like had Iron Man, Captain Marvel, and Thor flying towards it. So at the end of the book, Cable tells the team that they need to get a spaceship. And then, but of course, the final image is Colossus turned himself into the government because he's all feeling guilty over the men that were killed in the plant with the alien, the weird virus and whatnot. But this was a enjoyable book. And the reason I brought up the thing with the aliens is I wanted to if this eventually will tie into the cosmic stuff that they have going down, I guess, later in the year with the Infinity event with Thanos and whatever Guardians of the Galaxy and Nova are going to be tying into. I wonder if his vision has to do with that.
You're probably right. You know, it seems like everybody's represented. Like, there's even, it looks like a Blackbird, you know, like an X-Men Blackbird that's underneath the Quinjet in this, in that image. So, you know, it's probably across the Marvel Universe board. You know, I think that's what he's referring to.
Say it one more time. I've got distracted. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's all right. I was looking at the image that Cable had the vision. Uh-huh. And there's a Quinjet, Thor, Iron Man, Captain Marvel, and a Blackbird. So that means X-Men are in there, too.
Oh, there's a Blackbird in there? Hold up. Bring up my iPad. But
fancy schmancy.
Well, you're looking that up. You know, you said that you love this because Cable, you know, that's what you grew up on. For me, Cable and X-Force is like when the X-Men started to get terrible. Like, I love the X-Men. I love the old Claremont stuff, John Byrne stuff. You know, I read all that. And then, you know, you start to get into stuff like Acts of Vengeance. And Psylocke is suddenly like this ninja chick in purple. And, like, you know, I hated that era of X-Men when all that stuff started going down. When Jim Lee, you know, started that new X-Men number one, for me, that was like the end of me reading X-Men.
And I see, I enjoyed all that stuff.
Yeah, that was right in the middle of me, you know, collecting.
Yeah, I was along for the ride, but, you know, I kind of did miss the Claremont Silvestri days of X-Men, too. You know, I just kind of was like, oh, man, I want him back in Australia with Gateway. You know, I kind of wish that was still the deal. So I understand what you're saying.
It's funny, I brought up Cable and X-Force. It was at the end, and I kind of scrolled to like a certain point and stopped. And of course, I stopped it right on the image of the spaceship and whatnot. And I was about to ask, how could you tell the X-Men? What was their plane called?
Oh, the Blackbird.
Blackbird. How could you tell Blackbird from the rest of the planes? But it's obviously different from the rest of the military jets. And then there's a Quinjet with a nice little A on it, so I know what that is.
Yep.
Oh, and Hulk is riding on the wing of the Quinjet.
Yep.
I hadn't noticed that. You're getting staticky again, Dave.
Let me try to fix that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Age of Ultron over there.
Let's see. Got some tweets. Empress Geek says, where are the non-superhero books? I demand non-superhero books! !! You can demand all you want. unless one of my distinguished panel here has a non-superhero book they want to discuss this week.
I'm trying to think if I had any. You know, I pulled down Tomb Raider the beginning. I have not cracked it open yet. So I don't know. Maybe next week we'll cover that. I'm also reading Masks, which is being put out by Dynamite. I don't know if that might qualify as a superhero book. It's supposed to be a team-up book. It has the Green Hornet, the Enkato, the Spider, the Shadow, and Zorro all in the same book together. And the cover's by Alex Ross. And they're fighting this like kind of fascist, fascist type of, regime that's taken over. So they're trying to basically, fight against those forces. And it's a slow read, in terms of I think it's the fourth or fifth issue I'm into now. And they're just barely, it's moving along really slowly. I think I'm only buying it for the covers because Alex Ross has some amazing covers, but, it's kind of an expensive reason to get artwork.
All right, I've got one for your top superhero. Pantalones, Texas. And this is from Arkea. Yehudi Mercado, whoever that is. He's apparently an animation designer, and he's getting into comics and sequential art. And so a lot of his artwork has that kind of animation-type look to it. And it's basically this little kid who lives in the town in Texas where underwear was invented, and he decided that he wants to put his mark on it. And so he kind of somehow, do the tallest jump or do the, fastest, rocket glide or whatever. And his nemesis is the sheriff who's got a mobile chicken shack, which you can see on the back here. His little chicken shack is also the squad car. So he chases down bad guys and feeds them Mexican fried chicken. And he has this gigantic chicken that he's going to unveil as part of this giant anniversary deal. And the little kid decides that he's going to ride that chicken like a rodeo in order to put his mark on history. And so this whole book is in that kind of, that style of Phineas and Ferb, that kind of over-the-top, quirky humor, the impossible happens, and it all seems plausible, type of stuff to it. So it's only 1995 from Arkea, one of their hard covers that's always, the highest quality books you can get on the market, and it's just really great read, super thick, lots of story to it, so really enjoyable. I give that one a thumbs up.
Pretty cool.
I'll add one that I discussed briefly on last week's episode. The Five Weapons, number one, came out last week from Image. Fun book with teenage high school and joining clubs with weapons, and a new kid who supposedly comes from a great lineage of, I guess, assassins, and something isn't exactly right with him, which you have to find out what's going on by reading the actual book. I think that's the only non-superhero thing I read.
Charles, is that what everyone's talking about now? Non-superhero stuff?
We were just naming if there were not any non-superhero books we read.
I'll throw in the only one I can think of is Mouse Guard.
Who makes that?
It's Arkea. It's David Peterson. It's got, it's phenomenal stuff. He just finished off the latest miniseries, which is I forget the title of it, but it has to do with the Black Axe, one of the characters. But I'm one of the people that loves getting the trade paperback, the bound trade hardcover, because it's put together so well. So when that comes out, I'm on that, so fast. I definitely, I highly recommend it. It's I know you guys aren't into sword and sorcery, but it's just a little bit of swordplay. But other than that, it's really a phenomenal book.
The best way I can think to describe it is if you've ever seen something like Willow, and you take something like Willow, and instead of being, people midget, it's mice, walking around like humans. They go to other stories, they drink their ale, they've got and everything like that. It's kind of serious in a way, even though it's mice in the Middle Ages, fighting and whatever. It still has a very kind of deep feel to it. So It's one of those books that, you know, little kids could probably flip through it and just go, oh, look, mice in funny costumes, haha, whatever. But then for adults, there's a deeper story to it going on.
So I definitely recommend that.
And let's see, Roddy Cat asked Captain Marvel, did anyone have a chance at that one?
What issue?
Yeah, I think I'm current on that one.
Or maybe just the series overall.
Yeah, I read the last two. I read the one where she was it was revealed at the end that she could no longer fly. And then the next issue, you know, where she kind of starts to deal with that, you know, and, you know, being grounded. I think it's a good book. You know, it's you know, developing along well. It's kind of similar to Hawkeye. They're developing the supporting cast and a lot of side characters. But at the same time, it's still, you know, dealing with Carol Danvers' world. I like the fact that they feature other heroes in there. Like I forgot the woman's name. Monica Rambeau, the other Captain Marvel.
Right, slash performer. Photon, slash yeah. Whatever she wants to call herself now.
Yeah, I like that she's in there as well as you know, a few other Avengers and everything. But yeah, the big reveal in that, you know, at the end of last month's issue was that she has a tumor in her brain that will be affected if she continues to fly, and so now she has to go through, you know, her days learning how to cope with not being able to fly because it might kill her.
It's been on my list of books to check out. I just haven't found the time.
Yeah, I think it's a good read. You know, when we were at Comic-Con, that was one thing they said was that Marvel is pretty much that they're going to focus a lot on Captain Marvel as a character, and she's a great character to, you know, develop around because, you know, she's basically a military mind on par with Captain America. You know, she's basically should be the leader of the Avengers, you know, just as much as she has as much of a right to that role as Captain America does. And so the interaction between her, Cap, and the rest of the team in the Avengers and as well as her own book, you know, should be a great focus. And of course, she's one of the most powerful figures in the Marvel Universe right now.
Well, it depends. They keep mucking around with her power levels. Yeah. Like they have been ever since they took her powers away and then sent her into space and she became binary.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, you know, that's how far back Carol Danvers goes. And so she's been around, you know, in like different incarnations. And it's, you know, I think she's definitely a great character. And due to the wonders of the internet, I've caught up, you know, on reading this. Like, I haven't really, you know, I bought a couple of issues here and there. But in terms of, like, you know, getting caught up, I just recently caught up. And I think she's a good character. I think Deconic is doing a good job writing this. And you know, it's kind of, I hate to say cliche, but like messing with her power levels. It's like they've been doing that for so long.
They're just keeping the women down, man. Come on, man. This is 2013, man. She should be in charge. You know what I'm saying? We need to have a woman in charge of the Avengers. I say it for all my feminists out there that'll back me up. We need to have this happen.
I wouldn't mind seeing a Smasher solo book, the new Smasher female member of the Imperial Guard from Earth. I liked her intro story in Avengers.
Yeah, it was good.
Five, I think. Four. One of those books. But let's see. Another question from Cyber Soldier. Check out his podcast, Being the Block, on iTunes and Stitcher Radio.
Yeah, I checked out the last episode. Real funny. Go check that out, people.
He says, what did he, his question, hold on. Nova. Yeah, Nova seems like a good story. What do you think? He says only read the first issue, but the only issue that's come out is the first one. So you're not missing much.
Yeah.
I originally did not want to like Nova because it wasn't Richard Rider.
Yeah, Nova number one. I think we talked about that last week.
And I hate Sam Alexander. At least from the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon series. But he was actually likable in this issue. The art by Ed McGuinness was nice. Kind of, it's still in the infancy stage, but I was shocked that I enjoyed the book as much as I did.
One of the things about Nova, I really enjoyed the original series, the last series, but it was one of those things where when Abnett and Lanning were allowed to tell their story, I thought it was really good. But then I thought it would be another Annihilation crossover. You know, and then there's like War Kings. And then there was, you know, whatever. It was like every, you know, two or three issues, they would start getting in this rhythm of telling their story, and then suddenly something happens in the universe. They get pulled into the middle of some giant war. They got to go do that. Then that's finally over. They get back. They start to get back into their story. They start building stuff up again, and then something happens again. They got to run out, do a bunch of crossovers. So it finally got to the point where, you know, they said they were canceling the book, and I was kind of sad, but then at the same time, I'm like, well, you know, I really haven't enjoyed it as much as I've wanted to, because they kept forcing all this crossover stuff. So at least finally put it down and let it rest, and, you know, not people, but it's the same, you know, power. So I'm going to give it a shot. We'll see how it goes, and maybe they'll be able to stretch their legs and actually tell the story they want to tell in this series. The last guys in the last series just kept getting pulled all over the place.
Anyone else want to? Any Nova thoughts?
I agree with a lot of what Dirk said. So go ahead. Go ahead, Classic.
I was going to simply say, I just hope it ties in a lot with the upcoming Guardians of the Galaxy series, you know, that that there's a bit of overlap there. And I just hope that, you know, at least, you know, you can follow both books and not feel like you're left out.
I just wanted to add to what Dirt said. You know, it felt like those crossovers, like Annihilation, War of Kings, you know, Thanos Rising, whatever it is they wanted to call it. A lot of that was sales driven because they just wanted to get more people buying those books. So, you know, they felt I guess Marvel felt the need to just keep, you know, doing those crossovers to get people reading those books, because, you know, these books were unfortunately on the lower end of the sales spectrum. I enjoyed, you know, Richard Rider as Nova. You know, I enjoyed his maturation process. So, I think I've said this before on Cold Slither or maybe on the previous episode of Comic Book Chronicles, that, you know, I am not a fan of them just abandoning, you know, the developed Richard Rider, who was like, you know, a grizzled war veteran by the time Annihilation ended.
Yeah.
And let's see. Some other statements. Roddy Cat says, yeah, Monica Rambeau, if you haven't checked out Next Wave, it's kind of silly but good. Monica needs a book.
I could deal with her being back on Avengers.
He also says, that reminds me, Star-Lord is supposed to be dead. I wonder how they will explain that. OG Nova might be alive also.
Oh, yeah. Didn't Guardians 0.5 or 0.1 come out last week? I don't know if you guys talked about it already.
That, I can't remember. We did, I think, last week.
Yeah, we talked about it.
They didn't explain anything about how he's still alive. It was just an origin story.
Yeah, I recall skimming that, and then that's all they told.
And let's see. We went through some other stuff before we end the show here. Yeah, he said, Marty Cat says, I guess they will address that in Guardians of the Galaxy, maybe. I guess that's about a good ending point for the show. I want to thank my distinguished panel for joining me tonight. I'll go one by one, let you guys plug your stuff. Classic Material, you first.
Yeah, I'm Classic Material, the host of the Colts of the podcast. We are patiently awaiting for episode 50, but there's two things I want you to check out. One is Classic Team Up, which is my new podcast. I just uploaded episode 2 today, talking to Joe Zakari or SharePoint Joe from Underscoop Fire. We had a great conversation. Check that out. Also, check out our bracket challenge. Cold Slither Podcast presents Slither Madness 2013. Battle of the Bands. Who is the best band in TV and film history? And we ask you to decide. Right now, we're taking your predictions. Is it Alvin and the Chipmunks? Is it the Five Heartbeats? Is it Kid Video? You know, you have the chance to vote and give Kid Video's on the bracket. Yes. So go and check that out. Cast your vote. I even got the band from the Jetsons, the one that does the Eep-Op or Ock-Ock. You know, I've got them on the ballot, too. Check that out. You have until Sunday to put into your prediction brackets. You can win prizes from willswonders.com. We are going to do this like March Madness. There's going to be Sweet 16 and Elite 8, and we're going to have votes, and it's going to be good times and fun. So Slither Madness, check that out over at coldslitherpodcast.com or go to challenge.com/slithermadness2013.
And that's all I got. Oh, yeah. Follow me on Twitter, Classic Materials, CLASSICKMATERIA. Thank you very much.
All right. Dave Nappy, you're up next.
I'm nowhere near as active online, but you can follow me at Dave Nappy on Twitter, at DaveNappy. And I've got a prediction in on the Cold Slither Madness bracket. It's called, and I'm going to give you a hint as to who I think takes it all. We're on a mission from God. That's the name of my bracket.
Gem is adventure. Gem is excitement. Right? It's got to be Gem in the hologram. No, that's not it. Well, best of luck to you, Dave.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Mr. Dirt.
Yes. Yeah.
You can plug now.
Oh, wow. Thanks. So you can find me at popculturenetwork.com. Popculturenetwork.com, bunch of sites came together. If you want video game stuff, you can go to vglosers.com. You want our comic book stuff, you can go to ineedcomics.com. You want our toy stuff, go to thatnewtoysmell.com, or just come to popculturenetwork.com. You can also go to jointheforums.com, which is the official forums of the Pop Culture Network. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it is ptn_dirt. And we did a contest on Comaholics, which is our drunken comic book show over there. And it's turning out to be a lot harder than I thought. So I'm going to throw out the question here. Prizes, we've got Comixology codes for a bunch of different books that we can hand out. Some Uncanny X-Men stuff, some Deadpool. Basically, email me, dirt@popculturenetwork.com, if you think you can answer this question. And the question is, in what issue, give me the title and number, did we meet Jason Todd for the first time or the second time? And it is not in the New 52. But we meet for the first time, the second time, dirt@popculturenetwork.com.
Cool. So, yes, definitely check out all the guys' shows and podcasts. Follow them on Twitter. And, of course, you can follow myself on Twitter at TimDogg98. Follow the Click Nation account at The Click Nation. Of course, go to the website, TheClickNation.com, Facebook.com/TheClickNation, community, and the G Plus accounts. Just search for The Click Nation. Subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. That should be about it for tonight. I want to thank everyone for tuning in live, who's listening now. My man, I don't think I mentioned him tonight, but St. Walker 191 chimed in, said he's watching, said great show. Appreciate that, fam. And also to Sherry's Joy, thanks for tuning in tonight. Got to make sure I follow you on Twitter after the show. As Classic does the Running Man, thank you, Bots and Soap. And good luck to you in your future adventures. And hopefully you'll be doing a Google Plus Hangout live show in the future that I can check out. And shout outs to, I guess I'm going to shout out Empress Geek for hopefully giving me a hookup on a comic book interview while the show is going on. The Twitter account is JMRINGUET. He is the, I'm assuming it's a he. Yeah, JM Ringuit. He is the creator of Repossessed, which I believe is a Image book. Let me go back through the conversation from earlier. But I'm going to try to hook up an interview with him, hopefully in the future. Stay tuned to theclicknation.com. You'll see news about that dropping, hopefully. But going to go ahead and end things now. We're not entirely sure if there'll be a show next week. It depends on how the schedule goes. But as more comic book news drops and more comic books drop, you can be sure to tune in to us. Hopefully the three men joining me tonight will be in attendance. Hopefully maybe Empress Geek will get on so she can give her female perspective and give us a list of non-superhero books to read. I'll make sure to be doing other stuff. I'm just teasing. But for Classic Material, Dave Nappy, PCN_dirt, I'm Tim DOGG. Thank you for tuning into the Click Nation Comic Book Chronicles for March 7th, 2013, as PC and Dirt blows kisses to the wonderful audience. And we are signing off. Peace. Deuces.
This wasn't no movie. The smart thing was to say yes, get up, and leave the room. But then I thought to myself, what if this was a movie? Look, you, the plane you flew in on, them shoes, your socks with the bell on it, your gay ass accent, them cheap ass cigars, your yuck mouth teeth, your hairpiece, your chocolate, Guy Ritchie, Prince William, the Queen. This is America. My president is black and my Lambo is blue, nigga. Now get the out of my hotel room. And if I see you in the street, I'm slapping the out of you.
I'll be there for the film, coming to green, but then you're never walking out again.